From the Memoranda of P. K. Martyanov at the House of the Dead, 1850 to 1854. The hardest office which was assigned to us, who had been transferred on punishment, was keeping guard in the prison. It was the same one that Dostoevsky has described in his House of the Dead. Of those who had been implicated in the Petrushevsky affair, there were then in the prison Fyodor Mikhailovich Dostoevsky and Sergei Fyodorovich Durov. Whether they had formerly been much known in Petersburg, we are not aware. But during their stay in the prison, their Petersburg friends took the greatest interest in them and did everything possible to alleviate their lot. The two young men, once so elegant, made a sad spectacle in the prison. They wore the usual convict dress. In the summer, vests of striped grey and black stuff with yellow badges on the back and white caps with no brims. In the winter, short sheepskins, caps with ear flaps and mittens. On their arms and legs were chains which clanked at every movement, so that they were in no way externally distinguished from the other prisoners. Only one thing marked them out from the mass, the ineffaceable signs of good education and training. Dostoevsky looked like a strong, somewhat thick-set, well-disciplined working man. His hard fate had, as it were, turned him to stone. He seemed dull, awkward, and was always taciturn. On his pale, worn, ashen face, which was freckled with dark red spots, one never saw a smile. He opened his lips only to utter curt, disconnected remarks about his work. He always wore his cap dragged down on his forehead to his eyebrows. His glance was sullen, unpropitiating, fierce, and mostly directed on the ground. The prisoners did not like him, though they recognized his moral force. They looked askance at him, but with no malice, and would tacitly avoid him. He perceived this himself, and so kept aloof from all. Only on very rare occasions, when he was beyond himself with misery, would he draw any of the prisoners into conversation. Durov, on the contrary, looked like a fine gentleman even in prison clothes. He was well grown, held his head proudly aloft, his large black eyes looked friendly despite their short-sightedness, and he smiled on all and sundry. He wore his cap pushed back on his neck, and even in the worst hours preserved an unalterably cheerful aspect. He treated each individual prisoner amiably and cordially, and all of them liked him. But he suffered much, and was frightfully run down, so much so that sometimes he could not stir a foot. And yet he remained good-tempered, and tried to forget his physical pain in laughter and joking. From the prison guard was then demanded much care, energy, and vigilance. The guard had to escort the prisoners to the working places, and also to supervise them in the prison. The captain of the guard had to report every morning on the condition of the prisoners, to look after the cleanliness and discipline in the prison and the barrack rooms, to make surprise inspections, and prevent the smuggling in of schnapps, tobacco, playing cards, and other forbidden articles. His duties, therefore, were arduous and responsible. The naval cadets of that period were nevertheless ready to assume these duties in place of the officers, for in that way they obtained an opportunity of coming continually under the notice of their superiors, and at the same time of alleviating, so far as was feasible, the hard lot of the prisoners. Most of these worked outside the prison at the building of the fortress, but some were daily kept in to do the housework. These latter came under the immediate surveillance of the guard and would remain, unless they were sent to do work of some kind, either in the orderly room or in their cells. In this way, the naval cadets could always keep back any particular prisoner if they so desired. For instance, Dostoevsky and Durov were often kept back for housework. The captains of the guard would then send for them to the orderly room, where they would tell them the news and give them any presents, books, or letters that might have come for them. We let them come into the orderly room only at such times as we were sure that no superior officer was likely to appear. But in case of accident, we always kept a soldier in readiness to take them back to work. General Barislavsky, who superintended the labours, and the commandant of the fortress, General de Grave, were made aware of this proceeding by the physician, Dr. Troitsky. According to the cadets' reports, the character of Dostoevsky was not attractive. He always looked like a wolf in a trap and avoided all the prisoners. Even the humane treatment shown by his superiors, and their efforts to be useful to him and alleviate his lot, he took as an injury. He always looked gloomy, and amid the noise and animation of the prison, held himself aloof from all. Only of necessity did he ever speak a word. When the cadets summoned him to the orderly room, he would behave with much reserve. He paid no heed to their suggestion that he should sit down and rest, answered most unwillingly the questions put to him, and almost never permitted himself any frankness of speech. Every expression of sympathy he met with mistrust, as if he suspected in it some secret purpose. Even the books that were offered him he hardly ever accepted. Only in two cases, they were David Copperfield and the Pickwick Papers, did he show any interest in the books, or take them to hospital with him. Dr. Troitsky explained Dostoevsky's unsociability by the morbid state of his whole organism, which, as everyone knows, was shattered by his nervous troubles and epileptic fits, but outwardly he looked healthy, active, and vigorous. He shared, too, in all the labours of the other convicts. The cadet from whom I obtained this description accounted for Dostoevsky's unsociability by his fear that any relations with others, and the solicitude shown for him, might come to the knowledge of the authorities and injure him with them. Durov, on the contrary, was universally liked. Despite his sickly, frail appearance, he took an interest in everybody, gladly entered into relationship with people outside the prison, and was cordially grateful for any alleviation or aid that was offered him. He talked and even argued freely upon all sorts of subjects, and often succeeded in carrying his audience with him. His open, cordial, and energetic character was apparent to us all, and so he was much better liked than Dostoevsky was. The cadets observed with amazement that Dostoevsky and Durov hated one another with all the force of their beings. They were never seen together, and during their whole time in the prison at Omsk, they never exchanged a word with one another. When they both happened to be in the orderly room at the same time, they would sit in opposite corners and answer any questions they were asked with no more than a yes or no. This was noticed, and they were thenceforth summoned separately. When Durov was interrogated as to this odd behaviour, he answered that neither would condescend to address the other because prison life had made enemies of them. And Dostoevsky, though he speaks in his House of the Dead of many interesting convicts who were in the prison during his time, never once mentions Durov, either by his full name or by initials. And when he is obliged to refer to him, he does it thus. We, that is, I and the other prisoner of noble birth, who came to the prison at the same time as I did. Or thus. I observed with terror one of my prison mates, of noble birth, who was visibly going out like a candle. When he came to the prison, he was young, handsome, and attractive. He left it a broken, grey-haired, lame, and asthmatic creature. The head physician, Dr. Troitsky, showed great interest in the political prisoners. He often sent them word by the cadets that they might, one or the other of them, come to him in hospital for cure. And they frequently did go to hospital for several weeks, and there got good food, tea, wine, and other such things, either from the hospital kitchen or the doctor's own. According to what Dr. Troitsky told one of the cadets, Dostoevsky began his House of the Dead in hospital with the doctor's sanction, for the prisoners were not allowed writing materials without express permission. The first chapters of that work were long in the keeping of one of the hospital orderlies. General Borislavsky also showed favour to those two through the medium of his adjutant, Lieutenant Ivanov. By his permission, they were put only to the easier labours, except when they themselves desired to share the work of the other convicts. Among these easier labours were included painting work, the turning of wheels, the burning of alabaster, shovelling of snow, etc. Dostoevsky even got permission to do secretarial work in the office of the engineering department. But when Colonel Martin, in a report to the officer commanding the corps, expressed a doubt whether political offenders condemned to hard labour should be employed in such a manner, this arrangement came to an end. Once, when Dostoevsky had remained behind in the prison for housework, there suddenly came into his cell Major Krivtsov, whom Dostoevsky later described as a brute in human form, to find him lying on his plank bed.
"What is the meaning of this? Why is he not at his labour?" cried the major.
"He is ill, sir," answered a cadet, who happened to have accompanied the major in his capacity as officer of the guard.
"He has just had an epileptic fit."
"Nonsense! I am aware that you indulge him too much. Out to the guard room with him this instant. Bring the rods."
While he was being dragged from his plank and pushed along to the guard room, the cadet dispatched an exempt to the commandant with a report of the occurrence. General de Grave came at once to the guard room and stopped the whipping, while to Major Krivtsov he administered a public reprimand and gave orders that in no circumstances were ailing prisoners to be subjected to corporal punishment.